Well, hey, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
I don't know if we want to cover some what's happening in the world or if we should wait for that. My only real butthole is something that I'm going to mention in the episode. But I don't know if we should, first of all, commemorate this moment in which apparently I'm not the only one that went to watch The Gilded Age last night and it was in Spanish.
Yeah, you're not. I saw it on, I haven't seen it yet, but I saw on the internet that various people did. And that, like, you had to set your settings to Spanish in order to see it in English.
Yeah, I was kind of freaking out because here's the thing. I've been studying Spanish. I cannot speak it at all, but I've been studying it for several years. So sometimes, like, my phone thinks that I want to talk in Spanish and I have to, like, go into my settings and change that. Mm-hmm. So when I'm like, how is this happening that my TV set is now in Spanish? Yeah, anyways, I was glad that it wasn't just me, because yes, I had to go put it in Spanish and then it was finally in English.
Yeah, I saw a few people dealing with that and they were like, you guys, it's fine. You just had to switch it to Spanish. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not just common sense to be like, my TV characters are talking in Spanish. Oh, I know the answer. Switch it to Spanish.
Yeah, it was a weird moment of like, am I losing my mind? Like, I reset everything. Yeah. And then I don't know. Should we cover the other news right away?
Sure. If you want to start, I feel like it's better because you've known them longer.
Yeah. You know, I also am making the decision to take it at face value and go with what we're being told, which is that it was already determined as this season was being written that this is going to be the final season of And Just Like That. So what I'm reading into is that it was supposed to have been a 10 episode season, and that as he was writing episode 10, which would be the one we're about to cover, the conclusion was made of, oh, I think this is the end of the story. So we're going to give it two more episodes as sort of a supersized two-part finale, and that'll be the end of the series. Now, I will say, I like knowing ahead of time this is going to be the final season. So I wish they had played it that way. Mm-hmm. The announcement sort of made it sound like we didn't want the word final to be looming over the season. And I don't not get that, but I would have almost preferred that, going into it knowing, no, this is going to be the last batch of episodes. That said, it was funny watching this episode with that thought. And I kept thinking, like, this is the last episode. And then being like, no, there are two more. We're not done yet. But I don't know. Did it affect your viewing of it at all?
No, I mean, it sounded to me like they knew that this was going to be happening maybe when they started it. A butthole don that I got from a few people was that those short episodes were actually supposed to be one episode, which is why that they heard that on another podcast, which is why those storylines seemed so short, which is why the episodes themselves were so short, and that HBO was like, that episode's too long, spread it out. And maybe that's what it was. I mean, I'm sad because I'm going to miss these characters. Something we've talked about over and over again that I think is kind of confirmed too when you listen to the Writer's Room podcast is that a lot of the storylines feel like inside jokes that we aren't in on. Like, a lot of the storylines really feel like a bunch of people sitting around with their friends being like, you guys, we're funny. We should have a podcast. And and they talk about that. They're like, well, when so-and-so told us this actually happened to her, we were like, that needs to be a storyline. And I'm like, does it? You know? And I think,
right.
And I think what's happened is most people have grown to love these characters. And then you see all of their stuff be diminished, all of their, you know, growth be diminished in 2 seconds. And you don't even hear Carrie ever talk about her husband that she lost. And you don't hear Miranda ever really talk about Steve and I get that they are divorced, but I just feel like there would be more stuff. Like, it just feels like it's so easy for all these women to just kind of throw their past behind.
Yeah. And that certain, yeah, even Che never being mentioned. And you know, there are certain interesting, it's funny because even listening to the Writer's Room, there are moments that Michael Patrick King will say something and I'll go, really?
Yeah.
Is that? And we might get to a few of them in this one that he said certain things that I thought, like, I don't mean to be like, if you want to tell yourself that, it's that I do think in your mind, you can be like, yeah, this is what this means. And then for someone on the outside, it's kind of like, I don't know that that's what that means at all, but
right.
Okay, you're the writer. So I feel the same way that I'm sad because I do like I'm going to quote myself wrong here, but I was chatting with some other friends about the series, and the people in this particular group had varying levels of hating it versus being okay with it versus enjoying it. And me sort of being like, what I've decided is this is just me catching up with old friends who are making questionable decisions.
Yeah.
And I still love them. I just don't necessarily get why they're doing a lot of the things they're doing.
Right. And I guess we can go on to say, like, I think we forgave a lot of Miranda's behavior that didn't feel Miranda-esque because of... she was like discovering this new part about herself and it was exciting. And that's kind of why we were like, all right, it's good for her to be with Che. Fine, figure it out. But now I feel like there should be a little bit more groundedness in her.
Right.
And also, I was talking about this with a friend last night. Where does she get her money?
Yeah, I'm assuming that she has money from having been a lawyer for so long. She probably was a financially responsible person. And then they probably also bought that townhouse in Brooklyn for a certain amount and then sold it for much more than they bought it for. So I imagine that she has a bit of a nest egg. And yeah, I guess that's another reason why I'm a little bit bummed about it ending is that I, and this is going to sound so rude and I don't mean it that way, but I just kept hoping they'd get it right. I kept hoping like, we're going to get a season where it all makes sense. And I we're not going to get that. And there are ways in which I think this season is maybe the best season while having moments that don't make a lot of sense to me. I think overall the storylines have kind of flowed the most. Like this feels like the season in which the episodes link together the most cohesively. That said, I'm almost curious to go back and watch those two shorter episodes and see what they would feel like as one episode, because I do think of certain storylines that I'm like, oh yeah, that would have made more sense had that been just one episode. So that I like that idea.
And I wish we could have started season one with this energy and then gotten feedback and been able to even improve more.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we just did so much in season one that it was almost comical that now season three, even though we can look back and say, okay, I don't know if Miranda would act that way. We can say, oh, but she's also just discovering herself or this and that. Or I don't know if Carrie would be so quick to do A, B, C, and D or not care as much about that. I don't know. There's just a lot of not caring for their past selves. And I understand that when you get older, and I know this from talking to my parents, that you do tend to kind of just realize things aren't that big of a deal. But there's some things that are a big deal that I feel like would be carried on. One last butthole is from Jenny, who was saying that she had the subtitles on at the end of episode 9. And there's a scene with Anthony and Gianna. And the music changes from La Traviata. From two different arias from La Traviata, but the subtitle said music from Carmen. And she had to point out this error because whoever did the music editing had thought it through and deserves the credit. The Brindisi aria starts as Giuseppe arrives and his mom starts talking to him in Italian. Oh, I think she's from the UK because she said mom, and so did I just now. And La Traviata is an Italian opera written by Verdi, I know that, an Italian composer, whereas Carmen is by a French composer and set in Spain. And she goes on to say, incidentally, if anyone wants to geek out further, listen to the 1992 Met Opera recording with Pavarotti. It's just brilliant. So she's an orchestral musician and has performed this. So it's just interesting to see, like, yeah, they're going to use an Italian aria because...
Right.
And then... once again, someone needs to get on the captioning and language department there at HBO Max.
There's at least one in this episode that I'll bring up when we get to it. But I guess that means we should probably get into the episode.
Okay.
So we're here today to discuss Better Than Sex. This debuted July 31st, 2025, directed by Michael Patrick King, written by Samantha Irby, and it immediately looks like it's fall.
Yeah.
And that is confirmed.
Yep, it is autumn, and we see Carrie looking out her window. And if we didn't think she was rich enough, we discover something else. Carrie has a printer.
That now that is us having an inside
joke.
Yeah,
I was just going to say
that. We should have a podcast about it.
So Mike and I are on a group chat with people, and we just decided that for some reason, people who have printers in their home that are working are rich, because it's very hard to just have a printer that works. And it's something that's not right. That much money, but we determine someone's wealth on how many printers they own.
And I said this is maybe the most classic Carrie staring out the window while typing that mm-hmm. we've seen on this series. And we have her pain turned into productivity. And walking through her house in a heel with lots of heels laying around. And this is one moment in the podcast where he's like, and she doesn't wear her heels in the house anymore. And I'm like, well, she's in a heel in this scene.
Yeah, so. I literally wrote, she has shoes in the apartment. F you, Duncan.
And the house is furnished and Duncan is at the mm-hmm. table. And I did not notice the first time that this is not the table.
I did. So there's these lines that happen that caused me to kind of look for it, because you hear the family that never was faded from her life. She had done all she could. She had done all she could. She had done all she could. And I wrote, where is the Aiden table? And the she had done all she could. I like when they talk about it being a mantra, because she needs to convince herself.
And we find out that the man in the story returned from the war but died from an untreated wound from the previous battle. And I'm like, whoa, that's a metaphor if there ever was one.
And I was wondering, is the previous battle Carrie and Aiden round one, or was it Carrie or Aiden and Kathy round two? And we discovered it as Carrie and Aiden round one, if you listen to the writer's room.
Yeah, and it's surprising and scotch-worthy. She hasn't had a scotch-worthy in over a week.
I think, too, another butthole, Don, when we're talking about metaphors, is someone had commented that Aiden's duffel bag that we were like, what's it filled with, was a metaphor for it being baggage that he's bringing into the apartment. But here's why I don't... Sure, that could be what they meant, but I think that's a weird choice, because when in this episode or when in the series do we do stuff like that? Like, when are they ever like make such an obvious metaphor type thing without Carrie in the background saying, I couldn't help but wonder, was the baggage he brought in meant for me and I just never knew what it was?
Yeah, and I guess that's part of the... problem is maybe not the right word, but the issue with not having a voiceover, because my thing with that is just that they mentioned it more than one time of like, what's in the bags? Where I'm like, right. Well, then we should find what's in the bag. If what was in the bags was just his stuff, that makes sense. But it's weird that it became a thing and then never came to a point.
And back to this episode, something I noticed right away was that Duncan just seemed so comfortable in her home. So we know he's been there before.
And he knows where the scotch is. He knows where the glassware is. And we do find out that her book has put him a little behind.
Yeah. And we also find out that Carrie has 7 best-selling books. Duncan has 5. But she tells him that the plots are already written for him.
Yeah. I do think that it's funny of them sort of one-upping each other, of him saying, well, my books are 700 pages long. And yeah, but it's already written for him. And we do have purple prose brought up here.
Yeah, and then Duncan wonders. No, he doesn't wonder. What would he be reading if he were still here? Meaning Aiden.
Yeah, if Aiden was still around and she has no idea. But she wouldn't be this far along. And then he sort of gets back to like, yeah, the plot is already written. What the bloody hell takes me so long? He's super British in this episode.
Yeah, he, I mean, his pipe comes out and then he goes into like full Dickensian mode.
And Steve is alive.
Yeah, then we just hear, oh, Miranda, you pulled this place together pretty fast. I don't know what that accent was. It wasn't very.
It was good.
Thank you. Steve, yeah.
She points out that it was, yeah, pre-furnished.
Yeah, because it took them 2 years to decide on the couch. And we find out Brady made dinner.
Yeah, he's quitting Scout to go back to school, which of course Miranda's happy about.
Yeah, Steve is not, because, you know, Brady's a good cook. And he enrolled at the Institute of Culinary Education, and Steve thinks it's because of the bear.
Yeah, which is pretty funny. And they point out that they don't do a lot of timely references in this show, but it was too good of a reference not to use. And there's something else that he wanted to talk to them about, and we find out that he got someone pregnant.
And did you notice that his shirt, I think it's just a boxy shirt and the way that it doesn't really bend, it's like a stiffer fabric, but it looks like he's hiding something under there. It's very strange.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's a girl he hooked up with maybe twice. Her name is Mia, and she's very pregnant. And they got drunk, and we aren't going to address his underage drinking, I guess.
I guess not. And yeah, Steve gets really upset really quickly, which I'm not saying is weird, but it is. I was like, whoa, he's like really out of control. And he wants to know why he didn't wear, I wrote, a condom. It's a 3-syllable condom.
Yeah, and I think I was thinking about this. Why is Steve so upset? And, you know, Miranda's very rational in this situation. I think, I guess I don't know how much money Steve has either. I know he has a good amount, but I think Steve is probably still stuck in that brain of like being a bartender, like that never has left. And how are you going to do this? You work at a restaurant. I know how difficult it was with you, you know, that kind of stuff.
But like, even just getting to like shrug your shoulders again, I'm going to fucking lay you out. I'm like, Jesus Christ, Steve.
Yeah. And he doesn't know her last name. We know that even though Miranda and Steve had Brady early, we do know that Miranda knew Steve's last name because it's Brady.
Right. And yeah, this isn't a joke. You've messed up your entire life. And even just his like, fuck Miranda, fuck. I'm like, Steve, take a breath.
Yeah, he's not happy, but it also feels like a Steve response. You know, it adds some heightened dramatics to the scene. I do like that Steve says, I loved your mother, because he did. And I think he still does. Like, there's so much of Steve, I think, that still cares, obviously, for Miranda. But it was nice that he said that, and he said that in front of her. I think that was just a respectful moment. And now we get to a three-way.
Yeah, we cut to Charlotte at her place, but it's Miranda getting Carrie on the phone as well. Yeah, we get a three-way view, which we haven't really done in this series. It's happened a couple times in the past with the calling. And this is Charlotte's worst nightmare, but she doesn't want to make it about herself. And Carrie asks what she knows about her. And
yeah, Miranda is going to be a grandma, but maybe not, because if she doesn't want anything to do with him, that includes her. I don't know. It's a gray area. Miranda loves a gray area.
Yeah, it's a quick scene just as we sort of like go through the ideas of whether or not Miranda would be involved if Brady's not going to be involved. And then we're in bed with Anthony and Giuseppe.
With boy butter on the nightstand. Did you notice that?
Which I just don't like that name, but it's fine.
I only know about it because I did a show once that may have been sponsored by boy butter. So I immediately noticed it.
And I'm going to guess it's not the girl pushing Thin Mints at this hour at the door.
No, someone is pounding on the door and Giuseppe says, don't answer the door hard. And at first I thought it was just Giuseppe's Italian way of phrasing, like, don't be angry when you answer the door.
And then it's legitimately.
Right. Right. Literally hard, which we learned from the podcast is a prosthetic. And yes, Anthony keeps saying down boy. To it.
Down boy. And then we see it's a hot fireman and he says, oh boy.
Yeah, someone punctured a gas line, which puncturing, I was thinking about this because when I moved into this apartment, Mike helped me drill some stuff into my wall. And like, I'm really grateful we didn't hit a gas line or a water line.
Yeah, you know, that happened to my friend who lives in California. They were putting something up on the wall and they hit a water line and just like water was gushing into their dining room. Yeah. And we don't have to go to a hotel. We can go to Giuseppe's apartment, and Anthony prayed this day would never come. And we find out that Giuseppe has one roommate, an artist who works the night shift at Whole Foods. What do we think that means?
Stocking?
I guess so. Maybe it's stocking. I was I don't know if there's a night shift at Whole Foods.
I think there is. Yeah, there's overnight like stocking shifts at grocery stores. And Giuseppe also calls Anthony Tony, which I just, you know, something they do.
And crashing with you and your roommate on the Upper West Side, let me get my Wham cassettes.
Which I'm fine. Like, I don't know. The Upper West Side, is it about the roommate or the Upper West Side? Because the Upper West Side is not cheap.
No, not at all. And it must be the roommate. But it's a strange line. And now we're seeing the hamster. That hamster is really going.
Yeah, Lisa is going with Herbert on the press event, but needs to be on a train to D.C. and needs to spend quality time with Gabby's hamster. This is just all to tell us that she's overworked.
Yes. And that's what this whole scene is. And can you say transference? And we find out that Eunice is arriving on Friday night and they have a moment of almost sex, but they have to go. And yeah, it's all just to establish like she's busy and mom's coming.
Yeah.
And now this is Anthony and Giuseppe in bed and a puppet Giuseppe strolls in with no knock. Is this a normal thing to walk into your roommate's room in the middle of the night?
Yeah, with a puppet is very normal.
Right.
No, I mean, I think I always, when I had roommates, I would always knock. And maybe he just knows that with Giuseppe's there, it means that there's no one else there because Anthony's never been there. I don't know. But I said a Geppetto-like man comes in with his new marionette. It is Andrew, Giuseppe's roommate. And that, so we can get the line, I thought he worked at Whole Foods, not Old Foods, because he's an older man.
Which I'm kind of like throwing stones, Anthony.
Correct. And then Anthony also says Geppetto, so I was right.
Yeah. And we find out that Giuseppe is his muse. And
he carves original characters and does entertainments with them.
Which is, I do like that it's pointed out because he says entertainments twice and Anthony being like, stop saying entertainments like that's a thing.
Right. Could we have said that about comedy concert though in season one? Could one person have been like, stop saying comedy concert like it's a thing?
And we find out that this roommate is asexual and Anthony mentions the puppet's huge package.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to Charlotte's whole apartment is having an unnecessary renovation, but we find out it's not a whole apartment. It's just a lot of people with wallpaper.
Yeah. I think Charlotte's being unreasonable, where she's like, stop making noise, but keep working.
Yeah. And then we realize she's going to go on Zoom with Rhonda Portante, which was very important to the writers that this name was in the series. I don't get it.
Right, because they had come up with this name when there was going to be a character who was like the queen of Gramercy Park.
Okay.
And they thought that Rhonda Portante was such a funny name for this character. And then they never managed to work that character into the show. So they used it here. This is definitely a writer's room thing where they were like, this is going to be the funniest thing ever. And it's fine.
Right.
And we find out that she hated her wallpaper for years, which then I don't know why she was so concerned about Harry almost staining it in the first season. But that's fine. Life is short. Change it. And this session is 50 minutes and the clock is running.
Yeah, it's a psychic energy cleanse that she won at an auction.
Did you immediately know who this actress was?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's totally fine. I was just curious because I won't say who it is until later on. But it was funny in the writer's room how they were like, it's a secret. And I was like, oh, I knew who it was like the second that I heard her voice at all. But that's totally fine. I was just curious.
In a comic scene, of course, Henry and Rock are tap dancing outside the door because Rock got the lead in Thoroughly Modern Millie. Congrats, Rock.
I love Charlotte's line of like, we were all shocked. Which I think is very good. And it's kind of also a wink at the audience of like, this is a strange storyline that we're going to establish somehow. Rock is now the lead of the High School Musical. And I don't know. She has one of those, the woman who's the psychic is like rolling out her palm. She has one of those tiny like collagen rollers that people use on their faces, yeah. But she's using it on her palm, which I didn't know if that was a thing or not.
Yeah. And I'm sure it could be used for any tight muscles, but I think the whole point of this scene is we don't really see the background or who this person is. And in our minds, we're supposed to think this is just some like woman in a bedroom who doesn't know what she's doing at all.
And they have to practice because Rock is entry level at best.
And now we get to Charlotte just deciding she needs to reschedule. And we end up at Adam's incredible apartment he has lived in since he was 10 years old.
Now, I've not heard of West Beth Artist Housing. I've probably walked by it 5,000 times. It's on the corner of Washington and Bethune. Bethune is one of those three block streets that only exist in the West Village. Had you heard of this before?
I had not. No, I mean, I know about, you know, Manhattan Plaza and Hell's
Kitchen.
Same.
I know that one. Yeah. Yeah, this is down in the Village. And once again, I probably walked by it so many times. Yeah, they moved in when he was 10 and his mom had the loft and his sister and him had the bedroom. And now he's in the loft. I don't know why he's not in the bedroom, but that's fine.
Yeah, it's mostly so we find out it's rent controlled and he pays $900 a month. And his mom was a Raku potter.
Which I didn't know what that was. I had to look it up. Japanese pottery. And she admires the pottery. His mother made all of it and the weavings. And there was apple cider vinegar on everything. And she died of breast cancer when he was 20. And Seema wishes that she could have met her. And Adam takes her into the kitchen to meet his mother. I'm not going to shake her leaf.
She was the OG Birkenstock crystal type, which isn't a shock. And she wishes she could meet her. And that's kind of it. He introduces her to a plant that came from a tiny plant that he bought her many years ago, which is interesting because many, many years ago when I was in middle or high school, I had this Christmas cactus and my mom kept it alive for years and years and years. I don't know. It might still be alive. Who knows?
And this leads Seema to decide that mommy issues are the reason why this relationship isn't going to work. And I will say, at the beginning of this scene, the shot is so strange. And there's a man standing outside staring. It feels directly at the camera. And I'm like, weird man outside. And then we're going to find out that he's there for a reason later on. And I do like Carrie's, like, so should we stop taking suggestions from callers?
They're at Le B, which is at 283 West 12th Street. It is the second time she's been at this restaurant in this season. She went here for one of her series of bad dates, which is interesting because she's just doing the same thing over again, right? She's just looking for a reason for this not to work.
Well, she brings up her smoking a cigarette post-sex, and we're going to find out that she's talking about that for a reason later on.
Yeah, she says, that's not the problem as long as I do it out the window. And she thinks mommy issues are going to be the problem. And Carrie doesn't see the problem. She sees the problem with families that are living, obviously, because right. of what she went through yeah. with Aiden. And I just wrote that Seema is clearly just looking for a problem. She thinks the whole apartment is a shrine. I don't think it's a shrine. I think his mother used to live there. And then Seema suggests that maybe Carrie could have more than a writing partner with Duncan. And Carrie wonders if that actually would be more or would it be less? Because this is the first time that a man has really respected her thoughts first.
Yeah, seeing her as smart first. And this is where my butthole Dawn comes in. Because it's a thing that I had written a note last episode, and then we didn't talk about it. And it was something that I thought was really important that they talked about in the writer's room. Because it's Carrie responding when Aiden says, I need 100%. And Carrie says, so do I. And the idea that, and once again, this isn't coming from me, this is coming from Michael Patrick King, that she's never had a man give her 100% before. That Big started out giving her like 30% and perhaps ultimately gave her like 70. Aiden gave her whatever percentage we want to say Aiden gave her. Berger gave her way less than we thought that she was being given. Alec, you know, also like never was able to give her a full 100%. And the idea that she's sort of lived her whole life never having a man give her everything that she needed or the 100% that she needed, which I think is a really interesting and I guess kind of sad thought. And yeah, I don't know. I thought that this was a time to bring that up because here she's seeing someone who I think what she's saying is I've never had anyone respect this part of my personality. And what if I decide it can become a romantic thing and that takes that away. And I understand being afraid of that. And even her saying, you see it, Charlotte and Miranda see it, he sees it. You know, yeah, that's a big deal, I think.
And then we find out that Seema has hired Rocco back, and that's the gentleman who is waiting yes. outside. How yes. Patel Group must be thriving.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. And even in the writer's room thing, they're like, we're seeing now that she has her money back and she's doing great. I'm like, well, we haven't really seen that. If what we're seeing is she has a driver again, I guess, okay, that's...
And an office that's way too large.
Way too large. That she's going to later on question, like, are we doing okay? Yeah.
Right.
And okay, can I say my journey quickly of this location? Because those that were in our Patreon once upon a time may remember the ghost debacle of me trying to figure out where that apartment was in Soho and spending hours in my map.
Get a life.
Yeah. I've kind of let go of that. I have attempted to be like, just don't care about it that much. But just because we see this sign for the Parlor Collective. And now in my brain, I'm like, Parlor Collective doesn't exist. So I'm not going to use that to find out where the location is. But in the background, I can see Betty's Bakery. So I get in my map and I find Betty's Bakery. And right next to Betty's Bakery is something called Kadampa Meditation Center, Brooklyn, which is what I think this sign is, and they've just changed it to be Parlor Collective. And in my notes, I write, look up Betty. So I had done all of that and eventually been like, well, so the outside of this set is this meditation center. And then on my third viewing, when the camera turns around and we're inside, I see this pink sign across the street for a carpet warehouse. And I'm like, well, that would be interesting to see where that really is and where this interior is located. So Parta Collective is a real thing. Yeah. It's actually there.
My journey was
Atlantic Avenue.
My journey was I Googled Parlor Collective.
Yeah. It's a real, I just in my mind was certain this was made up. So yeah, no, they're really inside.
Work smarter, not harder.
100% was working harder. And that's fine. And
yeah, so Miranda and Charlotte are walking to Parlor where we are assuming Mia works. We find out Brady is still mad at Steve and moved out to live with Miranda. So some time has passed. I don't know how much time in the Sex and the City verse, but some time has passed. And oh, never mind. This is an unannounced visit. She is going undercover boss.
Yes. He gets a girl pregnant and I'm a mother again. And yeah, I'm not going to, I like the moment of like, I'm not going to tell her who we are. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
And then we get some Charlotte acting.
Yeah. And when we get there, you know, Miranda is I'm here to see Mia. She comes so highly recommended. The person at the front desk seems a little confused because we find out that Mia is just the shampoo girl, which rude.
It is, but I get in a world in which no one is, like, suggesting the shampoo girl to someone.
Right.
Which is sort of what the joke here is.
Right. And so how did she find her, I was thinking? And maybe Brady told her, oh, she works at the salon every once in a while. And then we get to the point where a friend of mine had I was watching this, and a friend of mine was texting me, oh my gosh, did you see the news about Anne Just Like That? And I said, I normally would be upset, but right now I'm at the point of the episode where Miranda is meeting the mother of her grandchild, and the mother is just ripping ass. And honestly, I love that. I think it's Samantha Irby who was like, I'm so glad you allowed me to just write an episode where they're farting, which is very on brand for me. But I don't know. Mia is washing her hair, ripping ass, and was going to have an abortion, but the baby will be a double Libra.
Which I then had to look that up, because Libras are in September. Like, it does follow my birthday. So that kind of timing-wise makes sense that she'd be very pregnant. And then I didn't 100% remember how moon signs work, but they do change every few days. So
yeah.
You would have to know a fairly specific window of when the baby's going to be born, but I guess it makes sense.
I'm a double Cancer. And Miranda asks what's the dad thinks, and she's doing that thing they do where they just are so obvious in this. And she says it's not like they're going to raise the kid together. And Miranda's like, well, you should get a paternity test. And then Maury comes out. No. And then Mia figures out, and then Mia just hoses her down. I don't know what's happening.
Well, I'm kind of on both sides of this, because I sort of get from Mia's perspective. I think also we've established that Mia's not the most responsible human being. Like, she is drinking a Red Bull while pregnant, you know, like, not really making the best decisions, because there is a world in which you understand, in which you go, oh, there is a Mia who would be, it's nice to meet you. I'm glad, you know, like, in which this isn't terribly inappropriate, mm-hmm. that the grandmother of the child you're pregnant with finds you and comes to your work. That's not a crazy thing to do. But I also get that this is a Mia who's going to spray her with water and accuse her of being a Taurus, and then accuse her of being binary, which I want Miranda to be like, that's not true. I dated Che.
Right. And then she's like, that's even worse. I just wrote, little girl or little boy, you're so binary, fart. I'm a Mia.
And we cut to Duncan drinking scotch and sort of, hello, I've done all my homework and I've been waiting a fortnight.
Yeah.
He gets, once again, he's super British here.
And now he's breaching the castle wall because he's walking upstairs. And we discover Carrie's printer is broken. Oh no, she's poor.
And Shu is there, and Shu wonders who this is.
Yeah, Shu is like, who is this man? And Duncan is going to fix the printer. He's going to unplug it and plug it back in. And it works.
And it's infuriating how often that is actually what fixes something. I don't know that it would ever fix a printer. But
or if
okay.
you like... I used to have a first generation iPod that would often get stuck. And in those, you could hear it like clicking. And if I just hit it really hard, sometimes it would work again. And he makes a comment, oh, you write in front of a window.
He writes in front of a wall so he can bang his head against it. And this is a continuing thing that makes me feel like Duncan's not doing it right.
Yeah, Duncan, I think, needs to not... Well, you know, he locks himself up in a dusty apartment, eating nothing but mediocre stew, smoking a pipe, and only writing at nighttime, but also doesn't sleep. So I think Duncan needs to have some more...
He needs a psychic cleanse.
Yeah, he needs a few things. And then he sees her dresses, and once again, very British, those frocks, you wear all of them.
He sees her frocks.
Yeah, and she says, Duncan, meet my girls. And what is interesting about this to me is... He picks up the shoe, sparkle, sparkle, sparkle. And he says hello to Carrie's Jimmy Choo shoes, which I thought was a play on her hello lover that she does when she and I think Samantha are looking through the window at the store.
Right.
And what was interesting to me about this is that Duncan seems to kind of appreciate the shoes or at least respect her love for them.
And talks like a phone, you're cross that I've kept your mummy cooped up inside low these many weeks.
Sorry to all of our listeners from across the pond if it feels like Mike is attacking you.
No, not at all. I don't mean it that way. I just think it's funny that this feels like a very specific Duncan that we haven't really met before. And maybe it is to establish that time has passed and he's more comfortable with her. I just remember like watching it being like, whoa, like we've gone really far in a different direction with this character.
And listener, Mike loves London.
I do love London. I'm going to get back there someday.
And then... he invites Carrie to a party at his publishing house. And she's going
to
go.
He's going to pay her to go how much? And I get that this is not real, but I didn't get what this was.
Me neither.
I guess it's just, yeah, okay, thank you. Okay, good. Because I didn't know if they were alluding to something.
It could also just be one of those things when you first start dating someone and you're flirting and you guys have these inside jokes that don't really make a lot of sense and they're not that funny, but you just keep going with it because it's the material you have, but they should have more material. But anyway, Gabby can't find Shirley.
But first we have his editor is going to be there and they're a bit miffed at his lack of progress low these many weeks. And I caught that he had used low twice and then Carrie points it out as well. And yeah, she's going to go with him. Yeah, so Gabby is rummaging through a sock drawer because she has to find Shirley.
Yeah, and the whole point of all of this is so that Gabby can say, you weren't here to watch her, you're never here. And so LTW can say, you're stupid, I'm furious at you. And I understand that Lisa is busy and overwhelmed and we're trying to see that and that she would say something to her child she would normally never say. But why are we using a hamster to show that?
I do also think it's an important distinction that she doesn't call her stupid. She says, why would you do something so stupid?
Okay.
Which is a fine point. And it's it's much like one time when my sister told someone if they were going to be a bitch, they shouldn't even bother coming to a particular thing. And the person got really mad. And my sister's very reasonable explanation was, I didn't call them a bitch. I said if they were going to be a bitch, which is, I think, very funny. And yeah, I yelled at Gabby so loud because, of course, it's right then when Eunice walks in and calls her mommy dearest.
Yeah, and we just find out she feels bad and Herbert is comforting and says, it's okay, and you're human.
You're human, and that's important in this moment that he says to her, you're not super mom tonight, you're human, that's fine. And yeah, there it is.
There's little Shirley.
Fucking rat.
Oh, you like Shirley.
I do. I'm saying he says that. I'm like, oh. I don't mind if Shirley's running around my room.
And then we see Seema, who is going downstairs to smoke her after sex cigarette out the window. And then mom falls out the window. Mom pulls what's her name? Lexi Featherstone.
Lexi Featherstone's out the window.
Mom becomes Lexi Featherstone and screams, New York is dead, and crashes out the window.
I wrote, she opens the window where mom is sitting, and of course.
Yeah.
And it's fine. I get that we have to do this to move the storyline. It's such an ask of your actress to make this look at all natural. Because why didn't she just go to the other window? Like, why did it have to be the plant window? Why would you suddenly...
Why is she smoking on the plant anyway?
Yeah, it's a lot, but it's fine. And I do like that she immediately runs up to tell Adam. Because there's a world in which she shuts the window and pretends like this never happened.
Right. And then... Shu is crawling on the computer, and I thought this was going to be something more than it was, but it's not.
Me too. Yeah. No, it's just to be adorable.
Yeah, we find out that Charlotte is at Carrie's house to have her energy cleanse.
And this also does a dialogue thing that I think is really funny, that I enjoy, because other than Carrie saying like, Shu, no, the first line of this is Charlotte starting with the word well. She says, like, well, I had to reschedule. So it's picking up mid-conversation, which I really enjoy. Like, I enjoy that in dialogue.
And we find out that Carrie's putting together an outfit for Duncan's publishing thing. And Charlotte sees the outfit and she says it's Vivian Westwood, which was her wedding dress. I don't know if that's intentional.
I'm going to say something that might be controversial. I don't love how this dress looks here. Like, it looks very strange. We'll get to it when she has it on later, but in the moment I'm like, that's a weird design for this dress.
Well, that's also very Carrie. It looks very...
Yeah, I get that.
It's giving me Lovely Ladies from Les Mis a little bit.
Well, it's supposed to sort of be, they call it the Cinderella dress, and that it's sort of the Cinderella both before the ball and at the ball.
That okay,
it's
that makes sense.
Partly the rags and partly at the ball, yeah. And we have a reference to the conversation that Miranda and Carrie had at Charlotte's party, where right. Carrie admits that she got very defensive when being asked. And even now, with Charlotte saying, is it more than just writing? And Carrie saying, why does everybody think it has to be more than writing? And here I am getting defensive with you when you're just sitting here listening.
Yeah. And Carrie even says she hesitated going because of Miranda's insinuation. And we kind of realize that she may have feelings and she doesn't know if she wants to go there. And Charlotte says, that's up to you. You know how true you were to him, but he's gone. And that dress deserves to be seen, which I love because she's just kind of... Charlotte would get the award for being best friend to everyone in this series.
Absolutely. And I'm going to point out one other thing that is a different word, which is that she doesn't say, I don't know if I want to go there. She says, I don't know if I want to go here. which I think is once again such an interesting distinction for a writer to say that she is sort of already here, that she's right. this is happening, whether she wants to admit it or not, it's happening, and she's not sure if it should. And I even like, you know, it's not, well, because she also says, I would never hear the end of it from Miranda, and my thought was, I don't think that's true. I don't think Miranda would make a big deal out of it.
No, and I think like Miranda's done some weird stuff.
Sure, yeah, Miranda has no room to talk, and then Charlotte's saying, even if it is, fuck Miranda. And I do like Carrie's, wow, somebody needs an energy cleanse.
And then we get to the energy cleanse, and Charlotte admits to the cleanser that she is actually carrying around some serious stuff. And then the cleanser magically turns on her screen, and it is...
it's Susie Essman. And I guess even though she's not an actress that I know all that well, she's just so specific. Like her voice, and even like her curly hair from behind, I just been like, oh, that's Susie Essman. And I guess most people would know her from Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's what she's done. That's her mm-hmm. biggest credit. But she was on Hacks and Broad City. And, you know, she had made the character had made a crack about like, what, you don't like your new wallpaper? And this is sort of her being like, sorry about that. You can forget people are people when you're on Zoom. And she's going to lead her through a guided meditation, because even though they really only had 12 minutes left, now she has all the time in the world for her.
And something also that I picked up on that I kind of mentioned earlier is when she turns the camera on, you see that it actually looks like a real therapist's office. That yeah. this is, well, because at first I thought we were going to get a comedic, you know, person behind there smoking a cigarette in their pajamas. Not, that's why she had the camera off. But right. it is a legit energy cleanser. And then we get to Seema's office with Artold saying they're not successful yet. Okay, so how do we get Rocco?
That was my moment. I'm like, wait, they're not wildly successful yet. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, and there's also someone else working there in the background. We don't know who they are, but they are a new employee. And then Adam ends up being there because Seema hasn't returned his calls or texts. And then Artold says, I got to get my chapstick to get out of the scene.
I feel like that had to have been an improv.
Well, if you notice, you probably didn't because I was watching this, that the background actor at that moment also leaves when Artold is like, I have to get my chapstick. So maybe they are together and that's like their code for each other to go have time together.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just even the thing of him, of her saying, I killed your mother, and Artold kind of freaking out and, you know, I just signed a 2-year lease. Because he starts to go, and then he kind of comes back and grabs his bag and says, I need my chapstick. I don't know. It was an interesting moment that I thought was funny. And Seema didn't know what to say because she killed the thing he loved the most. And he points out that cancer killed the thing that he loved the most.
Yeah, and once again, we're just reiterating that Seema's looking for a way out because she has a fear of commitment. But it's okay because Adam saved clippings and brought 5 pieces of his mother for Seema's office.
And it's also interesting to me, and I had this thought earlier when the plan first fell out of the window and she went up to tell him, that while there are things about Adam that annoy me and things about Adam that I'm like, oh, I would definitely find the reason to break up with you, he's never done anything to indicate that he's crazy. Like, he's never done anything to indicate that he's not like a very centered human being.
Yeah, not at all. And that's kind of just where we ended.
That's kind of it. Yeah, he's going to be the one that waters the plants. And we have Eunice saying that she has no interest in being late on this monumental night of her son's life. And I know this is wildly inappropriate, but there are times when I want someone to be like, Eunice, just don't be such a bitch. Like, just calm down
a
tiny
bit. You
could
do what your sister said and said, Eunice, don't act.
Yeah, like, exactly. Perfectly reasonable request.
And then they all get in the elevator and are like screaming and cheering because there's no yes. way he's not going to win. And I don't think Herbert won. The elevator opens. He didn't win. And Eunice isn't very nice and says, how could you enter a race if there was a chance you could lose?
Which is a crazy thing to say. And I get that mentality, but like, no, you have to try things that you might lose at. Like, that's kind of the point of life. And this is, I'm not trying to like be classist here at all, but there is that moment where like, we find out that he probably lost because he hadn't appealed to the working class.
Right.
And then Lisa has her moment of saying they're going to order a big old pizza, the kind that they... and the working class love with goat cheese on it.
I don't know.
Which is fine. I love goat cheese and it's great on a pizza, but it's so, to me, a sign of like, yeah, you probably didn't reach out to the working class.
No, like a lot of people I know in the working class would say goat cheese smells like feet.
And Lisa telling Herbert not to let his mom get to him. He can't believe he lost. And she says, you didn't win. You're human. And this is getting us back to what he had said to her earlier.
Yes. And now we are at the event.
Well, first
Yeah. We are in Carrie's closet. And this is a symbolism thing that maybe I noticed. She doesn't have the Vivian Westwood dress on. She has a gray dress on. And I don't know if this was a gray area reference, but she has like a gray suited dress.
They wanted it to look more business.
It did.
That she's decided to go with the business, though it is paired with apparently the highest heel that Sarah Jessica Parker has ever worn in this role.
Well, she knows Duncan's not home. So she's like, you know what? I'm just going to
I guess that's true.
Yeah. And then
and
she
goes, pause on the hill. And after a moment, she heads back up the stairs.
Right. And she puts on the Vivian Westwood.
And now we're at Lincoln Center. And this is a restaurant I'm kind of fascinated by, but I know I will never go to.
Yes. Lincoln.
Lincoln Restaurante. I'm just, you know, that's how it's written. Mm-hmm. And he's inside with Imogen, who looks well, and she admits that she does. This is Tina Banco, and I only wrote this down because I just assumed that she's British. She's not. She's from Pittsburgh.
Oh, so is our friend Eric.
So is our friend Eric. And yeah, she was on Elsbeth and the other two. She was also in that movie, Can You Ever Forgive Me, with Melissa McCarthy.
I saw that, and I really liked it, and I liked the true story, too. It's a very fascinating story.
Yeah, very, very good. Very, very good movie that should have made me crazy, and only, I think, worked because Melissa McCarthy is so good. Like, she's incredibly good in that role. And yeah, she's very excited that Carrie Bradshaw just walked in. She's always wanted her to show up at one of their events, and this isn't even a very good one.
Yeah, and she looks incredible. And Duncan says he invited her.
That has to be a great moment. Mm-hmm. I've had that moment once or twice where it's like, this is has to do with me, you know, like he must
I
be very
this.
Excited that here's this this woman that's like, how on earth is she here? And he's like, because of me, because that's my upstairs neighbor.
It usually happens when Mike and I go places together.
Yeah, all the time. And you clean up good. Is that the phrase?
Yeah. And Carrie asks for her payment.
Once again, I don't get it. No. I don't get what the joke is, but she doesn't take crypto or that other fake currency pounds. And now we have Anthony wanting to talk to Giuseppe about something, and Giuseppe insisting that he's a sweet asexual roommate, and would you like to trade him in for a sexual roommate?
Yeah, Anthony wants him to move in, and Giuseppe doesn't want to move too fast, and then we see Andrew masturbating to the Giuseppe puppet, and they're going to move in together.
I can't believe you didn't say whacking it, but yes, that's what's happening.
Why?
Because it just feels like more of a you phrase.
I like to use proper terminology. I've changed this season.
And they mention this being a psycho moment, but it's pretty clearly the theme from Jaws playing, which I thought was an interesting choice.
They're not very good with music right now.
Yeah, I guess not. And this gets Giuseppe to agree. Yeah, let's do it. I'll move in with you. Mm-hmm. And we get it sounds as if you've been helpful with the Iron Lady, and Maggie almost seems human, but Carrie insists that it's Duncan who has been helpful with her book.
Yeah, and this is all so that we find out that Imogen is actually Duncan's ex-wife.
Yes, and he will need a bit of an extension, and he's mentioning it now in front of Carrie Bradshaw because you'll want to impress her by saying yes. And we can talk about it next week when you're back in London. And this feels like one of those like bombs exploding moments where you're just like, this is my ex-wife. He's going back to London.
But you know. Also, for me, I thought that this didn't seem weird. It didn't feel like one of those Sex and the City moments where the bombs go off and you see Carrie's face change. It doesn't feel like this is going to mess up the trajectory at all, however it's supposed to go.
Yeah, it was lovely to finally meet you. I'm wonderful with writers as long as I don't marry them. And yeah, a riddle wrapped in an enigma. He admits that he might be an enigma, but not a riddle. It's pretty clear that he married his publisher because he enjoyed her shade of lipstick. And he missed his deadline, and they want to go somewhere they can sit down and eat. And she says she'll do it at no extra charge. And this is, once again, the joke that I don't get. But mm-hmm. We have a really quick scene at Miranda's where she just sort of goes in to check on Brady, and he's asleep with a cook's tour.
Anthony Bourdain's
on
book.
His chest. Yeah. And now we're back at the Carrie Duncan residence, is what I call it now.
Mm-hmm. And Carrie is walking Duncan and himself home. And she says, Carrie is walking Duncan and herself home. And she says, I think your book is wonderful. And he says, I think you're wonderful. Tonight, he discovered Carrie Bradshaw is a thing, but he didn't care before or after.
And she discovered that he's a mess. And this is also after he says, like, he needs a month of despising his first draft and tearing it apart. And this is continuing me being like, you're doing this wrong. Like, writing isn't supposed to be that, like, every aspect of writing for him seems torturous, and maybe he needs to, like, find a new way of doing these things.
Yeah, and she does a mental rewrite.
Yes.
Because she doesn't think he's a mess. She thinks he's wonderful as well, and he invites her downstairs To be clear, he's done writing and she doesn't want to go downstairs.
And it's funny that we don't really see her saying no. From the back of her head, we sort of see her shaking her head, mm-hmm. which I guess is him understanding that it's not going to happen. And we have this then, good night then. And she heads up, and much like the other dress, she turns back, changes her mind, says his name and runs down, and we have a kiss in the doorway. Mm-hmm. And I guess that this is where I did feel like bombs going off for me, because I didn't understand what was happening as he's saying to her, whoever lives here next will have better quality sheets. And I'm like, whoever, don't you own this house?
He says he won't be returning.
I thought we had established that he owns this place. And whoever rents it, I'm like, you weren't renting this. I thought the point of this was that you owned this and live here half of the year. Now, if he's selling it, that's one thing. But I was just confused. And this once again goes back to, like, I feel like, though I felt so much of this season was the most cohesive, we still have these moments where I'm just confused.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe, but like, as much as you say, once again, bombs are going off, she doesn't seem like that fazed by it.
She doesn't seem that fazed by it, and that's fine. I guess I'm just more fazed by it because now it seems that he's not coming back because she's a distraction. And I'm like, what? I don't know. I just don't fully understand what's happening here. And it feels almost not rude on his part. And I know that this is supposed to just be a nice, happy moment. And I'm glad they hooked up. Like, I'm glad because I do think that there is a benefit to, like, expressing yourself sexually to this person that you know you don't necessarily have a future with, but you want to have this moment. I just don't get the revelation in this moment that he also has to move because she's been a distraction. And we know when it comes to anything but writing, he is a mess. It's just odd to me.
What's going to happen to the woman? I mean, do you have the ending yet?
Well, she'll die of loneliness, of course.
It's a big cliche.
Smallpox, then?
No.
Bigpox.
May I make one final suggestion? She lives. She's such a unique character. I'd be ashamed to end her.
I will take that into consideration.
You know, this is the first time in a long while that I've enjoyed being completely preoccupied with someone living rather than someone deceased. I may have missed a deadline, but you've given me a new lifeline.
Duncan.
Yes.
Way too purple.
Yeah, the minute I said it, I knew that.
You are such a writer.
And darling, so are you.
And then we get to the woman sitting in the garden, and there's a purple dress, there's purple flowers, and then it makes me think, oh, the purple rug.
A lot of purple. I guess we did tie all the purple together. And we have the voiceover of, even though the summer had come and now gone, she could feel the warmth of its lingering touch on her face and body. How wonderful, how wonderful, how wonderful. And we look down through changing leaves, which reminds me very much of in season 5 at the end. We kind of had the same thing of the leaf floating down to finish off the season. And obviously we're not finishing the season, but it did remind me of that moment. And then I wrote, David Eigenberg got that good credit.
Woo! And I couldn't help but wonder, is Carrie, maybe, because we do, you know, the agent or the publisher does say, if you ever need a publisher in the UK, let me know. Maybe Carrie goes to UK and hangs out with Duncan and Samantha. Like at the end of the series, we get a text being like, hey girl, what if I was by country?
And she'd be like,
and then Samantha's like,
you can be by anything you want to be.
Yeah, these days.
Yeah, I couldn't help but wonder if he owned that house, if he was just renting it, if he's selling it because she's distracting, whereas I thought they were having a good work relationship. It makes me feel like he's looking at this thing very differently than she is, which is fine. It just threw me a bit at the end of the episode.
Yeah, but who knows?
That's it. And yeah, we'll be back next week. Wow, we only have 2 more episodes.
The final episode's going to be a little late because I will be officiating a wedding.
Yes, but next week should be on time. We'll be back to discuss.
Yeah.
Forget about the boy.
No canary in a cage for me. That is a song anyway, from Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Thoroughly Modern Millie, yeah, there we go. So, all right, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay,
oh, wait,
bye.
Do you have more to say?
That's it. Bye.
For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation. You can listen to my other podcast, Mike and Vanya Can't Not, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love it if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link, or tell a friend. Take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. As always, take care of yourself, and let's take care of each other.
Listener, you should know that right now Mike is trying to figure out how to put up his hair.
I know.
He's
making
decided
me a little
on
bit.
Like a ballerina bun with a nice side part.
I like it. My hair is too much. Also, Le B is what I call you sometimes.
Sometimes. Carrie's Brinter. Brinter.
Brinter.
Yeah. Ooh.
Though I said this is the most cohesive storyline season-wise story, I'm saying this all wrong. Though I felt so much of this season was the most cohesive.